It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
It's Livin' the Bream with host of Fox News at Night, Shannon Bream.
All right, this week on Livin' the Bream, you may notice we've got a little bit of a theme lately. We are going to continue to talk about education, the state of it in America, how it's changing, what parents can do to get more involved and be more aware, as I think they have over the last couple of years. So somebody who knows all about that is former Education Secretary Bessie DeVos, and she is the author of a brand new book you're going to want to hear all about. And we're going to talk about that today. It's called Hostages No More, The Fight for Education Freedom and the Future of the American Child. Madam Secretary, welcome.
Thanks, Shannon. Great to be with you. And it's Betsy, please.
Okay, Betsy, it will be. I think of you as I think of my mom, Marie, as somebody who dedicated her life to education and worked in different kinds of schools, but primarily in private schools where she made no money, but she felt like it was a great match for really serving kids. What is your take on where we are in the state of education across our country right now?
Well, Shannon, American education had a lot of shortcomings well before COVID, but the last 2 years have really laid bare for families across the country and, you know, grandparents and neighbors and friends, just how many failings there are and how it is not serving so many kids, really probably the majority of kids. Most of them are assigned to their assigned schools and don't have another choice to go somewhere else, don't have the resources to go somewhere else. And so the fact that that has been laid bare the last 2 years really does bring us to a point where policymakers need to be looking closely at the changes they must make to empower families to make the choices for their kids.
You know, and there's been this growing conversation in recent years and decades about let the money follow the student, let the parents take whatever that public funding is and take it to a school of their choice. We're waiting on a case from the Supreme Court right now that is examining, you know, taking that money and putting it into a private school. Does that violate the idea of separation of church and state? But what do you think of that concept? A lot of people worry it would leave some schools in dire straits where they're really struggling. And if every decent student pulled out and every family who cared about education pulled out, that the ones left behind would be struggling in the worst case scenario.
Well, that is actually the argument that those who try to defend and protect the status quo make about not allowing the freedom for families to make those decisions. And we, you know, I call it broadly education freedom. So it does mean directing the funds that are already meant for each individual child. I metaphorically talk about putting it in a backpack. You know, kids go to school every day with what they need for the day. Metaphorically, we should be putting the funds that every state and the federal government spends on that child's education in that backpack, and the family can decide where the child should go to school. If that's their assigned public school, if it's working for them, that's great. But there are other alternatives, and every family needs to have that opportunity. The reality is, for example, in the state of Florida, where many children are choosing, because Florida is the most advanced in education freedom, where they're choosing other schools and sometimes other districts, all of the achievement levels improve for kids who stay in their assigned public school, and then kids who make other choices. The reality is, people will change behavior. They will make adjustments and improvements. And if they don't, then a traditional school should go out of business and should be reconstituted as something else.
So let's talk about a couple of the different possibilities. Charter schools, they've had a lot of controversy, a lot of back and forth about whether they can meet the full accreditation standards of the communities that they're in, about whether, again, they pull the families that are most concerned and most involved in their kids' education out of where they could be continuing to have a conversation about changing the public school. Some people love them. Some people hate them. Some people feel threatened by them. What do you think about charter schools?
Well, charter schools are a great option for millions of kids. Now, well more than 2.5 million kids attending charter schools in the country. And that number has only grown coming through COVID. And the last report, there were over 1 million kids on waiting lists for charter schools. So charter schools are one choice that families can make. Private schools, parochial schools, homeschools, virtual schools. There's no end to the number of options. And frankly, we would begin to see a lot more creativity when we ultimately empower every family with those resources for each child's education. And, you know, we've been living in this one size fits all 175-year-old system that isn't working for too many kids. Even before COVID, we were having big challenges with making sure that kids receive the education and the preparation they need to be constructive members of society in the future.
So what about homeschools? Because I know a lot of people, I've got someone on my staff who was brilliant and wonderful and excelled in college, who was homeschooled, and they have kind of this reputation. It's dorky, weird people that are, you know, in religious compounds. And but it seems to be growing in popularity with a lot of different segments. Do you think that that's a viable option for kids now too?
Absolutely. Dixon, my two daughters, we homeschooled them for 3 years during their K-12 years. I had many close friends who homeschooled their children all through K-12. And interestingly, during all of the shutdowns and all of the mandates and everything, and then the revelations around curriculum, the number of reported homeschoolers has more than doubled in the last year and a half. And interestingly, among Black families, it's quintupled from 3% to 15%. And these are only the numbers that have been reported. Those options need to be supported. And those families who have found little homeschool cooperatives with a number of other families and have perhaps hired a great teacher to come and help make sure all of the kids are making their progress in their subject areas, those kinds of opportunities need to have room to grow and to proliferate if that's what other families choose.
We'll have more Live in the Bream in a moment.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Stay on top of the latest news and information from Fox News. Listen and download the Fox News Hourly Update on your time. The trending stories you need anytime you want it. Listen and download now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com.
Okay, so let's talk about a lot of the recent controversies with schools. Some of it is with sex assault. We'll get into that. Some of it is CRT, whether it's actually a thing or whether it's not a thing, or whether these are a bunch of scary, you know, straw men that the right is throwing out there to pull people out of public schools. We see heated school board meetings over any number of topics, whether a curriculum is appropriate for age levels and for conversations that maybe parents think they should have at home. So how do you respond to those who say, listen, this is a bunch of garbage. It's the right trying to scare everyone. No one's teaching CRT, or if they are, it's something that, you know, is a fit for K-12, and that there's a lot of misinformation with the right now targeting schools and the left?
Well, the reality is that parents across the country saw what was going on in their children's classroom up front and personal during remote education and distance learning. And many of them, whether it was CRT materials or anything else, the reality is a lot of this has been going on in schools, and now parents just saw it. And because of that, they are raising their voices. We've seen more parents involved in school board races and school board meetings. And tragically, the defenders of the status quo are turning on parents and, in fact, you know, called on through the School Boards Association and the White House, called on the Department of Justice to send the FBI in to investigate parents that are just speaking up for their kids. And so this is a broad issue, a broad problem. And we should collectively be demanding radical transparency around curriculum and what is going on in kids' classrooms. And when that's resisted, that is yet another reason that families need to be empowered to make the decisions for their kids' educations themselves.
We are talking with former Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos. Her new book, Hostages No More, The Fight for Education Freedom and the Future of the American Child. You talk about curriculum and transparency. And obviously, I would think, first of all, we as taxpayers are funding these schools, so we should be able to see what's going on. But as a parent, especially a child who's younger, I can't imagine what the argument is against letting parents see what you're teaching their children. That would be a red flag for me as a parent. But I know that there are those in the older grades and in high school who will talk about issues of sexuality and say, we have to protect these kids by they can confide in us, but us not telling their parents what's going on and what we're doing. So what do you make of that part of the conversation saying, listen, if these kids are fearful of the judgment or the response they'll get at home, that we as teachers and educators should allow them to keep their secrets here with us?
Well, first of all, you know, family and parents are the first educators, and they need to be the ones who know what's going on with their children. It is not a decision for the school or the government to make to withhold information from parents. And there's just been way too many revelations of secrecy around these things and you know, surprises to families who simply parents who simply want to know what is, you know, what's happening in their child's classroom and their child's school. This is a fundamental right as parents. And another reason why I think the continued call for education freedom and empowering families to make those choices has continued to grow, because we see too many instances and incidences of this happening in schools around the country. And it's not just in, you know, liberal urban areas. It's also in small rural school districts. I'm familiar with one even very close to home here in West Michigan. And so this is something that I think parents are right to be raising their voices about, and they need to continue to be able to demand from their traditional public schools transparency around what's going on.
You had some bold moves that critics did not love when you were Secretary of Education. So let me ask you about those. This idea of accused in a sexual assault situation, them having more rights. I mean, I think of it as a lawyer, as due process. But there was a lot of backlash and response to what you had proposed. Do you stand by what you proposed back then when you were secretary? And what do you make of where we are now?
Well, we actually went through the rulemaking process. So not only did we propose a rule, the rule is it has the force of law today. And what it does is provide a very reliable, consistent framework for institutions, for schools to use when dealing with these matters on their campuses. It puts the complainant in charge of what happens and what unfolds. What they want to see, if they just want to, you know, not have classes with the other individual or change dorms, or they are the ones who can call the shots on how that unfolds. And importantly, the one who's being accused has the guarantee that their due process rights will be protected. It seems very surprising that we had to actually go through a rulemaking process to guarantee this, because hundreds of lawsuits had been brought against schools who did it wrong. And many of the vast majority of them were found in favor of the accused, who did not receive a due process consideration. So this was a very laborious and painstaking process to ensure that in these very unfortunate and regrettable circumstances, that everyone involved can count on a framework and an approach that is going to respect both parties' rights.
It is a very difficult situation. And unfortunately, it's not uncommon. I mean, we would like it to be, but we hear about these cases and report on them, it seems like on a weekly, a monthly basis. So I'm hoping with schools having more structure to the way that they navigate these things, that, as you said, it would be the best possible scenario for everybody involved. Obviously, in the headlines right now, today, yet another January 6th hearing, the third one. Congress has got many more to come. I know you've spoken a bit on your feelings about that day and the fallout and President Trump conversations that you had with then Vice President Pence. What's on your mind as you watch this now coming back, you know, nearly a year and a half later, and delving into getting more of a background about exactly how that day played out and who was responsible for what?
Well, it's difficult to see, difficult to be reminded of a very difficult day and period of time. And I just hope that we can very soon get past all of this and be moving to looking to the future. I'm very much a forward-looking person. It's important from time to time to look in the rearview mirror, but I'd much rather be looking through the windshield and really talking about where we need to go next. And I hope that we can do that again very soon.
I mean, then President Trump only had a couple of weeks left in his term at that point, formally. Do you think that he understood he had not won the election at that point? Was it your wish that he might have resigned or stepped away in that interim? It was such a short period of time, but some people thought that it would have been important to make a statement.
Well, we had so much that we could have accomplished yet following the election in November of that year. And I continued to double down and work on the things that we needed to bring to a conclusion and importantly, try to, you know, finish as strong as possible. And one of my regrets is that we just didn't collectively as an administration, we weren't highlighting all the really good and important things that we had accomplished. And I really wish that we could have and would have done that.
Do you foresee that you would ever take another government or public position at some point in a future administration or run for something yourself?
Well, I never say never to anything, but because I never had anticipated serving as Secretary of Education, I don't have plans to do any of that. I'm going to continue focusing on doing what I can to advance policies that will empower families and help kids find their right education fit. That's been my life's calling, and I remain as passionate or more passionate about it than ever before.
Again, we're talking with former Education Secretary Betsy DeVos. Her book, Hostages No More, The Fight for Education Freedom and the Future of the American Child. Couple questions post K through 12. What do you make of our higher education system? Do you think that students should be channeled in other directions? You know, we hear more about vocational training, the military going straight to work, all kinds of other options. Do you think that given, you know, this constant conversation we have about forgiving billions of dollars, if not trillions of dollars in student aid and lending and student loans, what should our conversation be about post 12th grade?
So this is something that President Trump was very strong on talking about and the whole administration and we in the Department of Education about really supporting and highlighting multiple pathways beyond high school, because we know for a fact that today there are millions of jobs going unfilled that require something beyond high school in terms of additional education, but it might be a certificate or a credential or importantly, there's real opportunity to establish a lot more apprenticeship type opportunities to really fulfill the needs of for employers and really important career paths. But we keep going back to this 4-year college or university experience as the path to success. I think we've gone a long way to breaking that down and convincing more and more Americans that that isn't necessarily the right path. We need to do more with policy to support that. And we need to importantly allow for and encourage more alternative higher ed experiences to take root and allow for more students to find those opportunities. This is another important inflection point, I think, for education, and that is acknowledging that a 4-year education, as we have thought about it in the past century, is not necessarily it's certainly not what everyone should pursue, and it's not necessarily the answer to the future for the vast majority of young people rising in this country.
Mm-hmm. We have so much opportunity, which is a huge, huge blessing and something none of us should take for granted in this family. All right. In this country, which is sort of a family. Before we let you go, I always like to ask, what do you do for fun? Do you have any downtime? You're busy. You're going to be out promoting this book. But if you have some downtime, what do you like to do?
Well, I'm first and foremost love to be with my family. I have Dick and I have 10 grandchildren now, so they are great fun. The eldest is 11, so you can imagine it's very busy when they all get together. And I love to travel. I love to read. I love to be on the water anywhere in any size craft. I just love being on the water. It's very peaceful. And I love being on the water with family. So those are some of the things I enjoy doing.
Yes. Even if it's an inner tube, I love it. Just to get out there, splash around. There is something very peaceful and calming, I think, about the water. Okay. We've been talking with former Education Secretary Betsy DeVos today on Living the Bream. Her book, again, Hostages No More, The Fight for Education, Freedom, and the Future of the American Child. If you have questions about where our system is now, all the recent controversies, and what may be best for our kids moving forward, it's a fantastic read, and we wish you all the best with it. Secretary, thanks for stopping by Living the Bream.
Thanks so much, Shannon. Great to be with you.
Have a great summer.
Thanks. You too.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
Hey there, it's me, Kennedy. Make sure to check out my podcast, Kennedy Saves the World. It is 5 days a week, every week. Download and listen at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.